live from New York City and Waimea, Hawaii, it's the EHG Emmys After Show with your host by Universal Decree, Chris Hardwick. This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 88 for the week of September 21st, 2015. I am non-comedy comedy David T. Cole, and I'm here with first-time winner anointed to Show Academy Gets It, Sarah D. Bunting.
Nate Silver told me this might happen.
Militant manicab abstainer, Tara Ariano.
I chipped it in the car, okay?
And reoccurring Robert Durst punchline, Joe Reed.
Left at the mall, of course.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome back, Joe Reed.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for being with us to talk about the Emmys, and I'd just like to say that when your recurring Robert Durst punchline tag went into the dock, I was super jealous, and I remain super jealous right now. Oh, boy.
Well, not so, because we're talking about the Emmys, not only is Joe here, but smooth Joey Apollo's here.
That's right.
This is true.
And thank God.
I heard people were talking about awards, and I just sort of came over. Tractor beamed down here.
Let's start.
It was like cleaning the bathroom and the doorbell rang. Weird. I was just thinking about you, Apollo.
Where did you get that tracksuit? Said Sarah.
Yeah.
you need to borrow a medallion.
Let's start at the beginning. How do we all think Andy Samberg did as host? Because I would like to say I thought he was fucking great.
I liked him a lot.
I did too.
Me too.
And I know he's not everybody's thing, and he's probably more often my thing than other people, so I'll give people like a wide berth on that. But mm-hmm. I thought for the not always easy job of host, I thought it was the perfect sort of combination of somebody being naturally funny and not having to like try too hard, but also he has tendencies that he could have indulged that he didn't.
Yeah.
I was sort of expecting it to be like a very Lonely Island heavy kind of a show. And except for that one taped piece that was actually very short where
the person
got impaled by the Emmy.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. There wasn't this big, like, I'm on a boat production number or anything. And I thought for somebody who can be self-indulgent, but isn't always, he really hewed to the good Andy Samberg, and I really liked it.
I was more concerned knowing that Scott Aukerman was heading up the writing team because Comedy Bang Bang is an excellent podcast and a terrible TV show. And I was really scared that it was going to be more like the TV show. Yeah. But I think they like split the difference between their two sensibilities really, really well. And I thought a lot of the Slyer jokes were really funny. And the stupid ones were funny too, like pretending he had beef with Amy Poehler. Like, no one has beef with Amy Poehler. Like, obviously that was a joke. But even going back, like the one where he was up on the Emmy statue on the set and like made that joke about girls, and people on my timeline were like, that's a deep cut. You got to go way back. Like, who else is watching this show?
I don't even watch the show. I got it.
Everyone knows that happened. Dave doesn't know because he's an old man. He reads a different internet than the rest of us, but everyone knows. And it was more than a season ago. And like, the thing that Mark Harris brought up too, to just jump forward a little bit, they did a montage of like saying goodbye to the shows we lost this year, which first of all, fuck off the newsroom. Why are you even in there? But whatever. And then people on Twitter were like, well, I guess I don't have to watch that show now. It's like, these shows all ended months ago. Like,
God.
It's not like
fucking
these
spoiler babies
were on last night.
Deliver me.
I know. But Mark Harris, at Mark Harris NYC on Twitter, was like, so you care enough about TV that you're watching this awards show about TV, but not enough to watch these shows? Okay. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of what he was saying. Like, yes, totally. It's your responsibility to keep up with these shows if you don't want to be spoiled. Like, someone tweeted back to me, which I basically said, except I made it about having kids. And someone tweeted back to me, as I always say, I didn't tell you to have kids. That's my answer when people get behind and whine about this stuff. But someone was like, Sons of Anarchy was months ago. And I was like, Sons of Anarchy ended in December. Yes, that was months ago to me. That was the whole gestation of a baby ago.
I was just saying on Twitter today my odd little weird habit of, like, I haven't finished, like, three or four shows mm-hmm. from, like, the past summer. Like, the Mr. Robot finale is still hanging out.
Yeah.
And the last few Hannibals and whatever. These are shows that I like. I'm just, it's a weird quirk
of
me. Yeah,
I have, like, some Orphan Blacks and some.
And so somebody was, like, somebody tweeted at me, like, oh, man, that Emmy montage really must have freaked you out then. And it's like, no, because I understand that that's on me.
Yeah.
Like, if I end up getting spoiled for the Mr. Robot or Hannibal finales, like, that I have nobody to blame but myself.
Joseph Reed, you know, adult.
Yeah.
Well, and also, if you're on Twitter complaining about this, how did you manage to avoid hearing about this stuff anyway for months on end?
Also,
it's just a TV show.
Yep.
It's not fucking forecasting your own death.
Also, our friend Linda Holmes of the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast tweeted, because people were complaining, you know, at her about it also. She's like, you don't watch a show to see what happens in the last 30 seconds of it. Like, there's still a reason to watch a season of a TV show, even if you've seen a glimpse of, like, what happens in the last moments of it. Because by the time you get to it, if you really haven't gotten around to it, you're not going to remember what you saw, probably.
Right.
And B, you won't have any context for it anyway. So, like, who cares? And also, if you cared about those shows, you would have watched them by now. Sorry.
Right. No, it's true.
All right. En conclusion, shut up, intro.
As usual, fucking internet.
There were a couple really sort of like small Sandberg moments that are even just sort of like hosting production moments that I liked. Jane Lynch is the shame nun. I thought was so funny and brief and like...
I just saw these like, thanks, Jane. She's like, words.
Yeah. That moment for her. And then when she was with Stone Street, like, that banter wasn't good. But at one point she just sort of was like... She was just like, thank you for laughing at that. And it was just like this brief little thing. I'm like, that's so much more breezy and funny than anything she does on Hollywood Game Night.
So true.
As I said on Twitter, for which she has won two of Kat Dealey's Emmys.
And I agree with you. That. I don't even watch So You Think You Can Dance. And I know Kat Dealey is a better host. It's really weird that they're even in the same category, frankly. Hollywood Game Night is not a reality show. But anyway.
And I also really liked Sandberg's Paul Giamatti impersonation.
Yep.
Which, again, was so brief. But when he's like, the contracts are coming, Cube. I was on the floor.
Oh, my God. Me too. And that Houdini thing. Like, it's so cheap.
Yeah.
Catskillsy. But it's like, dun, dun, dun. And then it's the empty chair. And they hold on it, like, for just a beat. And then they cut back to Sandberg, who's like... Right? Yeah. Shit still works. It totally did. I barked laughing and then it was like, did that just happen?
I also like the bit that he did with Seth Meyers where they were talking about they were celebrating Lorne Michaels.
Yes.
And the whole thing was the world's best boss mug, which is ridiculous. But it was like the banter between the two of them. Obviously they've worked together for years and years, so they know each other, like, it's not surprising that they have good chemistry, but he was like, I heard Lorne gave a great speech at the Creative Arts Emmy. Nope, Lorne did not show up. Knew I was making a mistake as soon as I said it. His assistant did not even tell him it was happening. Like, all of that was so rapid fire. I thought that was great.
I had watched, actually, the Creative Arts Emmys the night before because I was just home in Buffalo with nothing to do on a Saturday night. And so after they were about to bring out the guest winners.
Yep.
And you know this if you saw on Twitter.
Yep.
Where they were like, and Bradley Whitford. And I was just like, oh, shit. Because I had remembered the ridiculous hat he wore the night before.
At the Shemmies.
And how fucking drunk he was also. But, like, he may or may not have been drunk. But, like, the hat was back and evolutionarily developed. Because it was,
oh, my,
like,
God. Winchell.
What in the world?
Easy. What was the excuse for that? He's, like, trying not to spoiler anyone on his hair for some reason.
He's been losing his hair. Somebody mentioned to me, they were like, not even the West Wing.
He's like playing someone like, I don't know, Governor Wallace or some 60s personage.
He's playing Mr. T in a TV movie, guys, okay? So maybe give him a break.
Well, that would be a pretty big spoiler.
Yeah, that one you maybe want to keep under your hat.
But yeah, that's unacceptable. Like, I guess it's mean to say just don't show up, but, like, that's not a good answer, that hat.
Hey, Margot Martindale didn't, so,
she,
like...
She didn't.
And then, why was he even on stage this time? For the poos room?
for Transparent, which thought he was legitimately good in that. That was one of the sort of silver linings of that Creative Arts Emmy.
All right, well, before we move on to the actual awards and any fulminating we need to do, since we're on the topic of presenter chemistry...
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Terrence Howard. And La Henson.
Yeah.
She was...
I really thought there was going to be blood on the dance floor.
I wish there was.
Oh, God, me too.
She gave some faces, too. She was the best. She was so... For somebody who didn't win, she had, like, three of my favorite moments of the night, that being one of them. She was really, really good.
And her hair looked... amazing.
She looked great head to toe. And like, yeah, when he like stopped their little banter moment to give her a kiss, and then she was like, oh, like,
yeah, it was such a great face.
The face that said, I read the Rolling Stone article and gross.
Uh-huh, totally.
Dave, Joe, since the last time we were talking about this off mic when we were recording the last Hollywood Game Night Show and Yell podcast, about the close-up with the Hollywood Reporter with the drama showrunners that Lee Daniels like put everyone on blast for not hiring black writers, which I finally watched. Amazingly, it was amazing. So.
Yeah.
But I recommend to everyone who's interested in the Empire backstory, watch that episode, because he puts it all out there, like talks about huge fights he's had with his cast, and like he
does
just screams at them all the time.
Yeah.
Does not give a fuck, and it's amazing. All right.
Is he wearing pajamas?
He's wearing a spotted top that looks like it could be a it's hard to say.
Is that a pajama top? No.
Yes.
All right, the winners. First of all, Dave, do you want to run down the top score getters in our Andrew Jules primetime Emmy pool?
I'll just do the winner, because, and I realize I didn't really ask anybody permission to actually say their names or anything like that. But with 95 points, Mark G, who has actually contributed to Extra Hot Great in the past. I can't remember how.
Probably
also on the
game.
Forums. I think with a game, he got 95 points. Second place was 90. And after that, it was something like 83 or something like that. So there's actually quite a bit of spread up at the top.
But, yeah, all of
them by
BB.
5 points. Mark wins. Congratulations.
I only got 69. Up high, my brother.
I really like the format of it, though. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't play because
super fun.
I don't know anything about anything. And, you
he
know,
does not.
I don't, you know. But the idea that you
either,
get to pick a winner
and
you get to pick a second place might win, and then that sort of plays into the points, makes it much more enjoyable.
But the won't win was the one I was really scared of, because that subtracts scores points from your score, which is that's a good wrinkle.
Yeah, I didn't manage my time properly this month, so I didn't have time to do it. But like, that is a wrinkle that will make sure that I do it next year, because
for sure.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, thank you again for Andrew Jewell for making that ballot and for sharing it with us and letting us share it with our audience, because I think a lot of people really had fun with it.
Yay!
All right, since we're talking winners and losers, we're bringing Smooth Joe Leopolo in here.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's talk Emmys.
How many did you correctly predict, Joe?
I was really good with the comedy winners and really not great with the drama winners. I was kind of riding the razor's edge with the drama winners. I didn't think Jon Hamm would win. Part of me would have just wanted Jon Hamm to not win for the hilarity of what Twitter would have done. So I picked Kyle Chandler because I was like, they like him. They gave him an award, whatever. And it would be just the kind of weirdo thing that they would do to make everybody mad. That didn't happen.
No.
I was certain, I was being so cynical, that Viola Davis and Taraji P. Henson would cancel out the trendy vote and that Robin Wright would sneak in and win for House of Cards. Didn't happen, happily. But I got Tony Hale right. I got Uzo Aduba right. I got obviously like Allison Janney's not a difficult one to get.
Nope.
I was also a little too ambitious with comedy actress. I thought Lisa Kudrow, just because I've been saying that for months and months, like she could win. She couldn't win. Julia Louis-Dreyfus won, obviously. I thought they were a good group of winners. I will say this. I was not prepared for how emotional I was going to get when Regina King won an Emmy.
My God.
That was amazing.
Finally.
That was
the
best. That was so great to watch. And just watching, like, if you watch the replay, find it online, everybody, all of her co-nominees were
so
to
psyched.
A woman, genuinely so psyched for her. Like, Kathy Bates was about to, like, jump out of her seat. Like, it was really, really great to see.
She was one of those, like, I was like, American Crime? Really? But it's interesting that she, I think the three most like beloved winners of the night were probably Regina King, Viola Davis, and Jon Hamm. And I didn't necessarily expect any of them to win, or I don't think I predicted any of them to win, because they were really having to drag some albatrossy writing around. Like Mad Men, it was like, it's almost over, I can stick it out. How to Get Away with Murder, I got away from after two episodes, because I was like, I can't watch this happening to actors I like. This is bullshit. And American Crime, I gave up after like 10 minutes of the pilot.
That one sat on my DVR for a good long while, being like, you should watch me. And finally I was like, I need room for other things. So
yeah, it was just so crashy. And I was like, I can't even. But that's interesting that maybe the Academy really did look at that. And they were like, you know, we're doing the Lord's work with C-minus scripting. So
yeah, Viola Davis was the reason I was excited about How to Get Away with Murder. And also the reason that I stopped watching, too, because there's not enough of her. Like, I don't care about all these little Archies trying to get through law school, like, whatever.
Totally.
But the fact that even a Chiron on the screen during the telecast misidentified her as an Oscar winner, which she should be, she's not, was the reason that I was like, oh, they're going to give it to her because she's fancy and she's from movies. And that was, I was right. But yeah, I voted mostly of a straight Veep ticket, and I was right almost the whole way.
You were rewarded, certainly. Yeah.
I was. The where I deviated was I thought Andre Brower might win for Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
They do love him. The Emmys do love him.
He's amazing, and he's so good on that show. We just rewatched all of season two, and he's so amazing. Like, in a really great cast, like, top to bottom, he's for sure the standout, which is really saying something.
I do have my worries that they're going to Ron Swanson him, which is go to that well too many times.
Well,
that is easy to have.
He's expressed this concern before, and I... Like, I feel you, but I feel like that would have started happening already.
That's maybe sort of what I, that's
yeah,
what
it's
I was
been
about
two
say.
Seasons already.
Yeah. Mm, okay. Well, look, I hope I'm wrong.
We're all cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
Dave, the bitter pessimist. How about Frances McDormand? You guys, I just love
how mad she is all the time. Where she was just like, books, try them sometime. It's like, okay.
Oh my God.
I said the next time she wins an award, they're just going to call her name and she's going to turn to Joel Cohen and punch him in the eye and then hug him and then walk up to the
stage.
Did
Jeff Drake say about books on one of our first episodes back?
The TV is the, are books that read to me or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the friend that reads to books to me.
That's right.
Yeah.
I watched that miniseries. It is really good. It deserved all the awards it got. I was glad that Zoe Kazan didn't win hers, though, because she was barely in it.
Yeah.
Speaking of
she's
barely
not my
in
favorite.
It, Margot Martindale, what? She was, like, not even in half of the episodes of last season of The Americans that I can recall, so that was really strange.
Well, that is the new requirement for guest actors. You have to be in less than... No, that is actually the honest truth.
Oh, like, really?
If you're in more than half of your season's episodes, you're considered a supporting actor.
Oh,
even
see?
If you're not, like, in the opening credits.
I thought you were making a Mrs. Harris, Ellen Burstyn joke.
Oh, no. No, you if... So if your, like, season is only, like, six episodes, you have to be in less than three. That's why That's why Orange is the New Black didn't have anybody in the guest acting nominations this year.
Got it.
Because everybody is in too many episodes for that
I
to happen.
I understand now. Dave had it in the intro, but maybe we should talk about it. The non-comedy comedy Transparent. Should it really be a comedy? I feel like no. I mean, I get the half hour thing, but it's not really a sitcom. And when I was watching the close up with the Hollywood Reporter, speaking of which, with the comedy showrunners, every time they came back from commercial, they were like, we're talking with the showrunners of TV's funniest comedies and like Jay Duplass from Togetherness and Jill Soloway. Mm, they're both great shows. I don't know about funniest shows on TV.
This was, I sort of had this thing with Enlightened, when Enlightened was on, and would have had this thing if Looking ever got awards attention, which it never did. Mm-hmm. But there's a place that needs to be made for the half hour dramas. I understand why it would be very hard for them to compete with hour long shows, just because I think there are voters who would be like, psh, half hour, like you're too short. And there's there's a lot of genre mixing right now that's just making easy categorization more and more difficult. And I do wonder if maybe just like switching it to a pure half hour versus hour long, it sounds like you're at the, you know, bureau for, you know, renewing your driver's license or whatever. When it's like best half hour show, best hour long show.
Right.
But that might end up being just an easier way of having to, rather than having to come back year after year and be like, what was Orange is the New Black this year?
Yeah.
Because like, what is it going to be next year? Was it was more comedy than it was drama last year. So like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And that might, I don't know, maybe that would have like this carryover effect in the Oscars and other awards for film where like, because it's like a distinction that's trying to not just get around length, but also genre, that maybe it would like destigmatize shorts or make them like more interesting and appealing to people and more programmable. I mean, they're completely different media and it's a totally different set of concerns. But I always think it's a little sad that people are like still, you know, trying to make shorts, and you know, civilians are still trying to not see them.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's, I'm not a crackpot.
It's tough to make the argument that Transparent is a comedy, and yet also whatever category they put that in, how are you not going to vote for Jeffrey Tambor just right. because he's so good on that show?
Yeah, he is. I have no qualms with it winning for directing or for his performance at all. Yeah. I'm just think, you know, putting it in where it's up against fit. Where it's up against Veep, like they're not the same kind of show. They're, right. It feels unfair.
Why can't they just do like dramedy? Why can't they just
There's
bite
not
the
enough of them, I don't think, to fill a category.
I bet there are. I mean, I think if you did
and
a dramedy
exactly
category,
do you...
it would be that.
You put
it
a
would
laugh
be
meter. How do right. you determine like is this more drama or itty?
You're just more and more finely splitting hairs.
But it used to be, Dave, that they could like a show could submit. I believe Joe will correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure, but I think a show could decide what it
in
was,
one or the other,
and it could
right.
submit in one or the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
But which is how we get the whole thing with like what's an anthology show and what isn't. But,
right.
But you know, I think there are enough dramedy type shows that it could work. You know, Togetherness, I just mentioned, Better Call Saul, I would put in that category.
Yeah.
And
just to clarify, because
sure.
sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's all I was going to say.
I was just going to clarify because the rule did change this year, that the rule is if you are considered a comedy if you are a half hour, and you are considered a drama if you're an hour, but then they let you make your case to whatever the, you know, a panel. Mm-hmm. And so this year, everybody who wanted to do that, like Jane the Virgin, was able to change their status, and Glee, which they weren't going to nominate Glee, but like Glee was able to argue its way down to being a comedy.
Right.
The only one they wouldn't let do that was Orange is the New Black, which really made it seem like what it was, which was a rule made to like thwart one show, which is an odd
right.
way to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Should we go around and talk about like biggest outrages and biggest joys?
Sure.
All right, Joe, what was your biggest outrage of the night?
Biggest outrage.
That's bullshit.
Maybe the applause from the back of the room when Paula Deen's name got read. Like,
ooh.
Did you remember that? There was
no,
that odd little pocket
I missed
from
it.
Like the cheap seats.
Oh,
of
dear.
Like, who is doing that? What's going on? There were a couple of moments in that monologue where Hollywood didn't show itself the best when Andy Samberg was like, there's more diversity than ever. And he was clearly leading up to that joke he made about like, well, we've fixed it all. Like,
yeah, racism is over. Don't fact check that.
But then they like sincerely applauded themselves for that. And I was like, guys.
Yeah.
Like, and then also when he made the Bill Cosby hoagie joke, which I thought was a really good joke. And everybody was like, oh, what? No. I'm like, get a grip, people. Like,
get your house in order, Techwood.
Yeah.
that was a really good joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that I don't think any of the actual awards I got all that mad about. I felt like this was a good, kind of a good year for award winners.
Yeah. Sarah?
I was flipping back and forth between the Emmys and the Mets and Yankees game, so the biggest outrage to me is the Matt Harvey pitching rules. Per the Emmys, vis-a-vis the Emmys, excuse me, I didn't really have any outrages. Like, there were a couple. Like, Jon Hamm's win is not my favorite, but Jon Hamm is one of my favorites.
That's the thing.
Like, that's how I feel about Peter Dinklage. I was
he
just
had
like,
a hard year.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
going to do right by being an Emmy winner.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that Bob Odenkirk is super underrated
yeah.
on that show, and I would have liked to see him get a win, but I also didn't expect him to get a win. So as far as, like,
yeah.
Modern Family level, this organization is the Marie Celeste of voting bodies, outrages, no.
Yeah,
none.
Yeah, I feel...
Bullpen management is another story.
I feel kind of the same. I would have loved to see Maggie Gyllenhaal win for The Honorable Woman, but
yeah.
I can't get mad about Frances McDormand. Like, she was incredible, and I didn't actually think...
She can get mad enough from both of you.
I felt the same way about David Oyelowo and
yeah.
Richard Jenkins. It's like, I love David Oyelowo, but like... Like, it's Richard Jenkins. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And he didn't win for The Visitor, which I'm still a little mad about. He was
so
class
good
in that category, but it yep. was like everyone got Day-Lewis that year. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, it's true. I was mostly, with regard to him, you're right. He had better seasons on that show, but like, as long as he's knocking out Jeff Daniels and Liev Schreiber for fucking Ray Donovan, can't really get that upset. And he climbed onto the stage. Like, he climbed on. He climbed over the lip of the stage, like
which
he's the
we've
Falcon.
Seen
Come
paparazzi
on,
photos of him. Like, there's significant like obstacles there happening to like get over the edge of that stage.
Oh, grow yeah, up, no, Joe.
That was discussed.
Yeah, like, good. It should
whether
have
there would be a pants rip.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of, you know.
How many candles might have been lit for that?
All right, well, Sarah brought up Modern Family, so let's say that's obviously everyone's greatest joy that it didn't four-peat or whatever in best comedy program. But any others that you were particularly joyful about? Joe.
I think I was actually just even beyond the Modern Family didn't win in best category in best comedy. It really does feel like we've turned that corner where like they're probably not going to win anything ever again.
Yeah.
Which is like pretty great, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was happy for the Game of Thrones wins. Like,
really?
I felt like this season that show sort of got caught in the kind of think piece churn that got a lot of like there was a lot of people being maybe a little bit oversensitive, like the, you know, the stuff with Sansa getting raped, I get it, but like the stuff with like Shireen getting burned at the stake and everybody being like a child was killed, I'm like, I know, I can't believe they murdered
they
an
actually
human
did that
being.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
well,
come,
I mean,
like,
on one hand you really gotta, you know, give it to them for their you know, commitment to realism.
It is, you know, verite in every way.
The game is not Candyland.
And let's
right. Thrones.
Yeah. Right. And let's remember, like, children are a renewable resource.
And again, I didn't tell Stannis to have a kid, so like,
nice.
Call back.
Sarah.
Regina King.
Yeah.
And several people I follow on Twitter using that opportunity to mention that she actually should have won this for Southland and urging people to watch it, which I will also do. And I know that our esteemed colleague John Ramos is pumping his fist in the car listening to this. It's really a good show. There are a lot of cuties in uniform, Mackenzie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was like, I thought that was pretty cool of Twitter. And I'm super happy for her. And she looked beautiful.
She did.
And she was stunned. And that
she
was
looked great.
I was happy.
My second biggest joy was Ellie Kemper's dress. Look it up. My number one joy was Veep winning for best comedy. It was up against some real bullshit nominees, not just Modern Family, but Louis. I mean, the joke in the monologue that Louis is now officially jazz, like, it's so true.
Yeah,
that
was good.
I didn't watch the last season because I hated the previous season so much. And I assume it's more of the same. I haven't gone back to look and I won't.
Yeah.
But Parks and Recreation, I know it was a sentimental favorite for a lot of people, but last season really stank it up. It was bad and it shouldn't have happened. So
the ending was bad too.
I feel like the ending was bad for sure. So I feel like Veep was the strongest nominee this in admittedly a not great category, and I was very pleased that it won. And if, you know, if Brooklyn Nine-Nine takes it next year, I'll be happy about that too.
You know what show in that category I unexpectedly love is Silicon Valley.
Oh, I would not expect you to love that show either, but I do too. And I
didn't see
the
it coming.
Episode.
I marathoned it when I was on vacation a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy shit, I love this show.
It's really funny.
I had troubles with the pilot too, because it seemed like it was actually two shows stuck together.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it really came on after that. And I have to say, the dick-to-dick whiteboard scene
in the season one
is
finale.
One of the funniest things in the last 20 years ever to hit.
It is good.
Comedy.
And Zach Woods on that show is otherworldly funny.
He's
so
great.
Good.
Yeah, the clip that, I won't go into it. I am surprised that you like that show, and I'm always surprised that the aforementioned Linda really likes it too. But it's if you tuned out after the pilot, give it another shot because it got way funnier. And that finale with the was legitimately suspenseful and great. So Silicon Valley, recommended. I guess that's it.
Oh, are we done?
Yeah.
That's it? All right. Yep. Well, thanks for coming, smooth Joey Apollo. And
anytime.
We'll welcome Joe Reed back in. Hi, Joe.
I'll see you for the People's Choice Award.
Where the fans decide. What is this, the line?
Where the fans decide. The Jenna Maroney line. Yeah.
That always works out.
Hi, Livy.
Hi, Mom.
We almost forgot to watch Season 9, Episode 8 of...
Face Off. But we did.
Yep.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, good thing Dad was around.
Real
so
professional
today's
ladies.
Challenge, the episode that we just watched, was very different than usual. What did they do differently?
So it wasn't a spotlight. It wasn't a foundation. It wasn't a focus.
What was it?
A gauntlet.
What's a gauntlet challenge?
So a gauntlet is when Face Off would, they would divide a challenge into three stages, and then they rank them from 1 to 9. And then they add up all the highest looks and the lowest looks. And once you get into the bottom place of stage 3, you're eliminated and will have to go home.
Phew, that was a lot to take in. That was the first time you learned about that kind of challenge. Also, they were weighted differently. So if
it's weighted differently in Face Off.
No. If you did really badly in the first one, but you did really well in the second one counts for more points than the first one did. And the third one counted for more points than the first and the second one.
Okay, so now I understand it, and it makes sense now.
Super. So what was the very first challenge? Do you remember?
Oh, I remember there was Iceland and the desert, and they had to create the final looks, so they had costumes designed for them, and then they had to go through the winter and summer factor.
Right. So what they were testing was the exposure to the sun or exposure to the cold, and they had to do the makeup so that the models looked like they were exposed to the elements.
Okay.
If you had to be alone in the desert or you had to be alone in the South Pole, which would you choose?
I would choose the desert.
Why?
The desert, just because I could find water, I could find food. In the South Pole, it would actually be harder to survive. Plus, when I'm in the desert, I have a camel to show me the way.
Do you remember who was the winner for the desert or Arctic challenge?
I think it was Nora, by my remembrance.
Your memory, yep. And do you remember who's on the bottom?
Kevin.
On to challenge 2. The models already had their prosthetics on, and what did the contestants have to do?
They had to finish the painting, and it had to match the wardrobe that they had on.
And that one wasn't really that exciting. Ben was on the top, and then Evan was the one who got the bottom look for just the painting.
Yeah, because he did say that painting wasn't his thing.
Yeah, he was stressed. And then the third one...
But don't get stressed, or else it really sets you back.
What was the third challenge?
Well, there was all the models on Face Off ever. And what they did is they took a hero-like, so like the main character, and then the two backups for him.
That's right. Everybody had 3 models and had to make a main makeup and 2 backup makeups.
And there was, they got to choose from goblins, witches, and something else. It was warlocks. So now that I remembered it, now we can move on to angels.
Yes. Which of those 3 categories would you want to do makeup for if you had to choose?
I would choose angels, just because I'm more familiar with beauty makeup.
Right. And who won that challenge, the third challenge? Do you remember?
See, so Evan.
Evan.
Evan. Yeah. I always call him Evan.
So Evan went from the bottom to the top, just like Kevin did.
It's like a roller coaster, so I think that's what they do. The people on the bottom are so frustrated that they're actually on the bottom that they boost themselves to the top.
Mm-hmm. And Evan's makeup was okay, but I don't know if it was top looks. I kind of wonder if the judges really like him, so they gave him top looks so he wouldn't end up in the bottom because he did poorly on the other two.
Yeah, I think so, because even if the third one is the toughest one and it gives you more points, he still did 2, which adds him up on more bad points.
Who ended up being the final winner for the gauntlet?
It was Nora.
That's right, she did pretty good.
I would say she did.
And who was the loser?
It was Jasmine.
Were you surprised to see her go so soon? I thought she would stay a bit longer.
Not so soon. I mean, they would only do the gauntlet for people who actually made it really far. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say it's so soon, but you're right. I think I thought she would have stayed longer.
I thought she was better than, like, Meg and Stevie.
Well, at the beginning, I remember Stevie with Libby and being a bit bad because they were all stressed together.
That's true. And Jasmine didn't do great today, so she did. I guess she did deserve to go.
Even though I wanted her to stay longer.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens next week. Thanks for speaking with me, Liv.
Hopefully it's not a gauntlet again.
Ooh, I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, whatever it is, it'll be fun. Bye.
Bye.
That was Ellie in the background. We'll have the conclusion to what Ellie was talking about later.
She doesn't like being left out. It's hard to be four.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of it being hard to be four,
don't love that transition. The Blotter presents The Deliberate Stranger. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our newest segment on Extra Hot Great, My Little True Crime Corner. As you have no doubt heard, because I keep flogging it, and no, I will not stop, I have a true crime blog called The Blotter. You can find it at the-blotter.com. I review true crime stuff, everything from 48 Hours to The Deliberate Stranger, which, if you've never heard of it, is a 1986 miniseries about Ted Bundy, starring Mark Harmon, which he kills people navally.
Yeah!
This one is actually, I struggled with whether to use this one as the first segment in the series because it's actually kind of hard to find. I urge you, however, to nag Hulu on Twitter and various other social media to add it to its library because it really does hold up. You heard the infamous Casio in the intro. It's like, I was like, there's no way that's as creepy as I remember it. I was 13. It's a Casio. It's Mark Harmon, like, running around with sociopathic cheer, wearing a bunch of turtlenecks and Aspen. And it's still really creepy. And he is outstanding. Like, yeah. I think that nobody remembers this whole part of his career anymore. Certainly nobody remembers Summer School, which is really unfortunate.
That is not true.
I do.
I remember every second of Summer School. He was such a fox in that movie.
Holy crap. Now you're getting it. Hand gesture. yeah, good times. The Deliberate Stranger it holds up really well. It's well put together. There are a few bits that are a little slow, but it's like this was the golden age of the first golden age of the miniseries. And it is a buffet of 80s hates, that guy's, Emmett Walsh, My Birthday Mate is in it, Frederick Aww. Cut the Rebop Forest is in it, Glynis O'Connor, who made TV movie and then completely vanished.
Yep.
I think she was in one Law and Order, maybe? is in it as the hapless girlfriend and her camel-toed high-waisted pants. It's really well done, and you forget, like, first of all, that miniseries like this were, like, commonplace in May sweeps, so you would have a guy like this who just came off St. Elsewhere, starring as Ted Bundy, and it wouldn't ruin his career.
Yeah.
But you also forget that at this point, Ted Bundy was still alive, and there was actually kind of no guarantee that he would stay in custody until he was actually killed. The dude escaped a bunch of times and stayed out for a while. It's not like 48 hours and they caught him like at the edge of town. He went to Florida.
Oh, jeez.
And until he like lost it and went into a sorority house and lost it. Like they wouldn't have, he would have been fine. And he was supporting himself just stealing. Like this guy was seriously someone that you were afraid of.
Yeah.
It's like an active thing. So if you can find it, secondhand on DVD, I definitely recommend it. But I really think the better option is to write letters to Amazon Prime, Hulu, and or your congressperson and be like, look, this is a really good time capsule of both how we thought about crime back then and how we thought about miniseries back then. It's definitely a worthwhile sit, and with Halloween coming up, I definitely think you should put your hands on it.
All right, and let's not forget to list all the alternate titles for the Blotter Presents we were coming up with on Skype. Why Even Blotter?
Blotter Pops.
Blotter Not.
Blotter House 5.
Blotter Off Dead.
Blotter for Elephants.
Like Blotter for Chocolate.
Sea Blotters.
Blot Rock.
Don't Call Me Blotter.
There Blotter Be a Better Way.
Blotter Call Saul.
Blotter's Rights.
I Can't Believe It's Not Blotter.
Blotter Day Saints.
Not Without My Blotter.
Take a Blotter, Maria.
Beer Blottered Fish.
Burger King, home of the blotter.
Don't go chasing blotter falls.
Welcome back, blotter.
And overreactive blotter. Just to remind everybody that you can buy an extra Hot Great ad or an ad on Again With This, or you can buy them both at the same time for a discounted rate. $50 for a personal ad, $100 for a business ad. Go to previously.tv, hit the podcast on the nav bar, and you'll see a drop down that says buy a podcast ad. And that's where you want to go. Fill out the form and we'll talk shop. We can do the creative for you if you want. Many thanks everybody that's bought an ad in the past. We have some great personal ads. We've had people donate their time to charity. We've had some great products we wouldn't have known about otherwise. So thanks for your support. And again, go to previously.tv and you can go to the podcast section and hit the ads, or you can just go to previously.tv/EHG ads and that'll get you there. Time to go around Dalatar.
Okay, let's talk about Best Time Ever with Neil Patrick Harris, because no, it isn't. It's so bad.
Most flagrant case of false advertising since,
since my lawsuit against the makers of The NeverEnding Story, I tweeted that night while live tweeting it. Oh my God, you guys, it's so terrible. The premise is that it's supposed to be bringing back the variety shows of yore, which, by the way, this is not a medium we need or a genre that we need on TV anymore. As I believe you said it, Joe, or possibly it was Kim Reed, one of the two of you said, the internet is your variety show, and it's very true.
I feel like I think that was me, actually, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, if you want to put together an hour of a bunch of different shit, you can do that yourself. You don't need NBC to, like, put it on for you. It certainly does not have to be live for any other reason than that making it live makes it an event because you're hoping someone's going to fall off their pogo stick and break their neck in front of you. Like, I don't know why else you would do it live. It makes no sense. But, like, when you hear variety show, as I wrote in my post on, which you can see at previously.tv, you expect it to be a mix of, like, dumb comedy sketches and musical performances a la Hee Haw or Sonny and Cher or Donnie and Marie or what have you. And
you,
like,
bit her?
Bit him too. Yeah, but instead, this show is like the first half hour was just pranks. It's like hidden camera stuff. Like, it's not, and a bunch of them in a row. And then, like, going into people's houses and watching them karaoke, like, it did not seem produced. The flow of it was completely off. Neil Patrick Harris is so smug for someone who the public used to love. He has pissed away all of that goodwill, as far as I can tell. And I guess it's interesting that you know, he does comedy and magic and he dances and sings and whatever. He can jump off a pogo stick, as I previously mentioned. But, like, who cares? Like, why am I spending an hour watching him be this pleased with himself? It's not entertaining. And
listen, I'm not going to watch a one-man band, even though that guy can do a lot of different things too.
Exactly.
Also, spend the time getting rewrites on those Heineken ads. I've now seen each one of them 78,414 times, and they fucking suck.
All over the U.S. Open. Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real not good. And people have been tweeting me, might just be the same person twice, asking me and Joe to pick back up where we left off on the Show and Yell podcast and do after shows on this. And let the word go out from this place in time. I am never watching the show again, not even to shit
Best
on it.
Dome ever.
Oh my God, it's so, you cannot imagine how bad it is. So,
over my stone cold body, is what I will say.
Exactly. There is no way I am watching this turd one more time. No one else should either. It's moving to 8 o'clock next week. I hope that means it's dying, because it should. It's shit. Let's move on.
All right, Joe, take it away.
Okay, one, Sergeant Blotter. So last week was the season finale of So You Think You Can Dance. I haven't been home for weeks upon weeks upon weeks. I don't know what my bed looks like anymore. So I haven't actually seen the last two episodes of it, which in and of itself is something of an indictment of the level of quality of
Good
this
news.
Season.
It was in the Emmy montage.
Yeah. Yeah. As the show, as because it died. Testament to how not great the season was that I kind of didn't go out of my way, but also a testament to my love for the series as a whole that I stuck with it through 12 seasons anyway, because any reality show, when it gets that long, unless you are an ironclad premise like, for me, Survivor, is really hard for me to stick with. I couldn't stick with Project Runway or Top Chef or any other shows. They're still, you know, they're solid types of shows. I just couldn't. So You Think You Can Dance was always very special to me. And this seems like it's the fine. This was the last season. Everybody was very surprised that it came back even this season. So nobody's really very optimistic at all that it's going to come back. So this feels like the end, and this feels, you know, kind of sad for me. This was a show that, it's odd to say this about, like, a reality competition show, but, like, it kept a special place in my heart. I always sort of enjoyed finding other people on Twitter who liked the show. I could sort of tweet out little dog whistles about it, and I would hear back from people. And, like, in the off season, it always felt like people sort of, like, out in the wilderness being like, when's it coming back?
Well, and the nature of it means that, like, it's like Idol, where you sort of, you hook into these people, and there's kind of an emotional arc for the season too, because you're watching them fulfill their dreams in a very real way, you know?
Well, and with dancing, for me, watching people, because, like, singing is one thing, and that's people putting themselves out there too, but watching people dance, particularly watching boys dance like ballet contemporary type styles, because it's such a feminized thing, I find it very moving to see, you know, these kids sort of put themselves out there in that way.
Oh, it always makes me cry to watch dance. Yeah, so I understand.
So just, if this is the end, I wanted to throw a couple things thanks out to So You Think You Can Dance for audition episodes that realized way before American Idol did that people didn't want to see total train wrecks all the time. For utilizing Paula Abdul billion times better than she was on American Idol because you were asking her to talk about something that she was actually good at. For making Broadway doubly fun for me, because there's always somebody in the ensemble who was on So You Think You Can Dance. There are three of them in Hamilton right now. There were a couple of them in Bring It On. There were, like, countless newsies. 12 seasons worth of letting us all bond over the fact that Nigel Lithgow is a sexist creeper. We all know it. Making sure that we all knew that that in a Paso Doble, the guy is the matador and the girl is the cape. And perhaps most importantly, So You Think You Can Dance was a delivery system for me for Kat Deely, who started hosting the show in the second season. Nobody remembers the woman who hosted the first season because Kat Deely is phenomenally wonderful. She is sort of the best type of host in that she cares intensely about the outcomes of the show and also the contestants. She has a very cool big sister vibe with them. She's fun bantering with the host. She'll give Nigel some shit every once in a while. She's got that sort of, like, cool British girl thing. And I was sort of thinking about that she's, like, would be the perfect addition to my esteemed level of entertainment.
Oh, I remembered.
Thank you, Dave. I was hoping you would. Joe's Blousy Blondes, the only collection of women in Hollywood who deserve to have the Singing Nuns as their theme song. I love her. I hope she finds, if this is the end, I hope she finds something else to do.
Oh, she'll be fine.
Real soon. I always thought that before everybody got sick and tired of Neil Patrick Harris, I was like, Kat Deely, Neil Patrick Harris to host the Emmys. I don't want that to happen anymore, but, like, something else. Because I think she's wonderful, and I think the show is wonderful, and I will miss it.
Aww.
Sarah.
I'm here to tip my hat to one Nina Garcia. Not that she necessarily needs it. However, last season, she tried every inch of my patience with the nonstop stink face and the straining to make various Corsian fetches happen. I don't know what happened in the interim. She got that cast off her foot. Loved one pointed out that if she doesn't have to be there, and she is there, maybe she could do a better job of acting, like it's not worse than a pap smear. But she's improved 500% in season 14. The judging overall is sometimes a little weird and obvious in its contrivances. But
Blake dress.
Oh, God, please.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's gone now. Spoiler.
Yep.
That was also in the montage. but not have it, like, they all just seem, like, more psyched about things. Heidi's being less of a bitch. Like, I don't always agree with what they do, but at least they're, like, psyched to be doing it instead of acting like it's a ship that's actually sinking and they're strapped to their chairs. So, good job, Nina.
Yep.
Quickly, I just want to shout out Fargo Season 2. I've been watching the screeners. I'm really into Season 2. It seems so much more confident and less hamstrung by the movie.
Yep.
They set it back in the 70s. You know, the tie is to the...
Really?
Yeah. The tie is that shit.
The dad from season one. Dad of... Molly's dad, Salverson.
Salverson is now... You know, we get him in his 40s or 30s or whatever.
Is he Patrick Wilson?
That's right. Yeah. And
Patrick Wilson?
Yeah.
Well, shit. I gotta start watching that again.
Yeah. It's 70...
Damn it, peak TV.
It's 79. Yeah. So it's, you know... It's where the 80s election's coming up. So we got Reagan and Carter, and they sort of frame a lot of the stuff in things that are going on at the time. I don't really want to give too much away, but...
Yeah, it doesn't come back until October 13th.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed the first two. Tara's got a policy that she doesn't like to watch episodes that are going to air, you know, too far out so that she has to write about. Which is frustrating because I really want to watch episodes 3 and 4 because we have them too.
I'll try. Well,
you forget things, though. It's tough.
It's hard. And I don't want to like be writing about episode one knowing what happens in episode 3.
No, I get it. I'm just saying it's frustrating because I really wanted to watch it. Everybody's in this show.
Everybody's in it.
Wow. It's the cast.
Elizabeth Marvel is in it.
No shit. Oh, I love
her.
Ted Danson is in it.
She's in the SVU premiere.
He plays Patrick Wilson's father-in-law. Kristen Milioti is Patrick Wilson's wife. Nice. Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst are married. Plemons has put on a ton of weight for this role. Uh-huh. We see him in his underpants, and he is not faking.
I saw Jesse Plemons in two movies at the Toronto Film Festival, and his face gets weirder and weirder every time I see him. But I'm in a very pro Kirsten Dunst place after that movie Bachelorette, so I could not be more excited.
She's good.
She's really good. Yep. Who else is in it? Brad Garrett, Bokeem Woodbine.
One of the Culkins.
Yeah, Kieran Culkin.
Gene Smart.
Ooh, the guy
who played
Ty from
Battlestar Galactica.
Dave was like, is that Burn Notice? Burn Notice is in it.
Yeah. Burn Notice.
Burn Notice is great
Suits
in this,
was
too.
In it.
He's really good.
Any good in it? Because I feel like he keeps getting cast and stuff because he's super cool looking and charismatic and he really can't act at all.
Which are you asking is good? Who's
Woodbine.
Good? Oh, Woodbine. Yeah, he's good. He's really good. He's from Kansas City crime family.
Yeah,
gets involved in the story kind of sideways.
Sort of the base of the story is a brewing mob war, kind of a Midwestern mob war, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah, we get a Kieran and a Cusack, not the ones you think.
Yeah. So anyway, so it's a bit out, but I just want to say that I'm really enjoying it a lot. Like
I
like season one okay after they sort of shook off the Fargo the movie-itis issues they had that I'm sure had to be in there to sell the series. That's fine, but I found them very deliberate and sort of look at me, I'm a shiny star, you know, and this one just seems so much more confident and weird too. Like it's going into some of the elements are kind of Twins Peakian almost.
Yeah,
there's
still references to Fargo, like you know it doesn't feel like it's a total departure, but it's more in the like in the feel of it as opposed to direct tie-ins to stuff that happened in the movie.
Like
there's a
like,
shot where it's like, oh, that reminds me of that thing that happened in Fargo, or the music for sure.
And it's, you know, it's they're building this universe, which is fine. Like if they want to keep on time jumping like this, I'm totally in for it. And it's sort of like, you know, it becomes more like American Horror Story sort of as a, you know, season anthology series or something like that. I'm fine with that because I love it. Discovering each of these characters in season two has been fantastic. Like they're all great and they're all really interesting.
And you know, Dave hates everything. So to get Dave's seal of approval really means something.
Yeah. I'm hard to please. And I admit that, but
Dave watched the first act of not even the first, like to the commercial of the Bastard Executioner was like, I don't know what's happening. Turn this off.
I'll take Tiny Triumphs for 200, Alex.
Why, Sarah Bunting, you hit the Tiny Triumph Daily Double.
Wow. Can we just talk about, this is Sarah D. Bunting here with Mark Blankenship, whose Tiny Triumph we will be reviewing. But first of all, and you've probably guessed it's Jeopardy related, but it just occurred to me that whenever people make that joke, like, I'll take blank category for blank, Alex, they always say 200 or 400. You ever notice that?
Oh. Yeah, I think it's something about ingrained or false modesty. Like, I don't want to pretend like I could get the $2,000 question right, but I can give myself the 400. maybe?
I guess. I'm still, like, I don't watch the show all that regularly anymore, and I'm still, like, back in the old dollar amounts from, like, the 80s.
Oh,
and I'm
yes.
like, there's $2,000 questions? What? Get off my lawn, Alex.
And grow your mustache back, you fool.
Anyway, Mr. Blankenship, please tell us where you and your chair will be going next month and what you'll be doing there.
Oh my gosh. Well, as some of you may recall, the last time I sat in the Blankenship chair here on Extra Hot Great, I mentioned that I had gotten to have a Jeopardy audition. And today is Saturday, September 19th. And on Thursday, September 17th, I learned that my audition went very well, and I, in fact, will now be a contestant on Jeopardy!
What is awesome?
What is me? What?
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting.
So I'm going to film my episode in October, and it will air in December. And I say episode, but really I hope I mean episodes, plural.
Yeah, me too. I hope we just hear nothing for, like, months. It's like, where, what happened to him? Did he die? Like, he's in Jeopardy, whatever, embargo sequester camp.
I said to my friends at work that even though I have to sign a confidentiality agreement about the outcome, if I never come back to work, they should assume that it went pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm so delighted to be able to share here, especially because I feel like the fact that I am the kind of person who wants to be on a television-related podcast such as this one is one of the reasons that I actually got onto Jeopardy in the first place. And I also have been so very delighted to hone my trivia skills on so many game times. And I cannot wait to let everybody know what the actual air date is going to be. And my only request is if we could all just cross our fingers out there in EHG land that when I get on the show, they find a way to do 7 Broadway-related categories.
And maybe 1 baseball-football combo so that Smooth Joey Apollo and I can feel like we helped.
Yes.
Even a little.
Yes.
That I really, yeah, this was my tiny triumph, was like getting out a stack of baseball reference books and writing a whole Jeopardy category, which you may have heard on past Extra Hot Crates.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and it really is going to be a village effort to help me study, and I embrace and accept and deeply value all of that help. So, yeah.
Well, my eternal admiration, even for getting an audition, never mind that you got on the show, since I have flunked out of the online test, I think, 17,000 times we're up to now. Might be high 16,000s, probably like 17,000. So that's really great. We will keep you listeners posted on when the exact air dates are.
And that was my tiny triumph for, let's say, 2,000.
Yeah, let's. That's a true Daily Double.
I've always wanted to say that.
We're going to make him wear his valued guest t-shirt when he goes on the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. From the
Also, I like the idea of Sarah and I as like the Burgess Meredith and Burt Young of training him on sports categories.
Yes.
Totally.
I mean, like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, come
you
on.
Nibble on lightning and you poo-poo out thunder. Yeah, so the Blankenship chair becomes the Blankenship podium. Very exciting.
Good job,
yeah.
Mark.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, it's time for the canon. Joe, take it away.
Yes, so I have brought with me season 1, episode 2 of the short-lived, much-loved NBC sitcom Best Friends Forever. This episode is titled The Butt Dial. Not many people watched this series when it aired, but
Hello.
It'll be very, very familiar to you if you are a Playing House fan, since this was Lennon Parham and Jessica St. Clair's first crack at a sitcom about best friends. And in many ways, this does feel like a first draft version of Playing House before like a bunch of network notes came down and like changes were made to the show. Instead of Maggie and Emma, they go by their real first names, Lennon and Jessica. Instead of a small town Connecticut ? I believe.
Yes.
It takes place in New York City. Instead of Lennon's character starting the series with the end of her relationship, it's Jessica this time whose marriage falls apart in the pilot. In both cases, Jessica moves a great distance. In this case, she moves from San Francisco to New York to move in with Lennon. And in this case, Lennon is living with her boyfriend, Joe. And their best friendship, Lennon and Jessica's, is once again mined for comedy. It was very, very difficult to choose an episode from Best Friends Forever. Sarah and Tara will attest to the fact that I got submitter's remorse the other day. And was like, no, when I could have done something else. It's fine. I'll whatever. They only made 6 episodes. And while I adore them all 6 of them, no single episode really screams out for special recognition status. So I picked the butt dial because it includes the most elements of the show that I love. I felt like it was a fairly representative episode. So the episode begins with the 3 main characters, Lennon, Jessica, and Joe, goofing around in the kitchen after Jess has made a delicious pulled pork dinner. She mentions how she's starting to get back her old form after several days of wallowing and crying and taking long, sad baths. Like any good best friend, Lennon ups the ante by putting on by producing an apron from the burger joint, seemingly, that they used to work at when they were younger, and kicking off an It's Raining Men sing-along, as all best friends must do. So that's all going well until something goes amiss.
Joe, take that picture! Lennon, stop singing! My phone accidentally dialed somebody in my butt!
Well, who did it call?
Peter! It called Peter.
Oh. Your ex-husband? No way.
Okay. All right, I recorded 6:44.
Okay, well, what did he hear in the message?
Let's backtrack. Everybody backtrack.
Well, you were just doing according to all sources.
No, but before that, didn't I say something about the crying and the taking of the bath?
Yes, but you did not say anything about the butt rash that you got from only wearing yoga pants.
Or when you were mistaken for a homeless woman when you went to the grocery store wrapped in blankets.
I didn't say any of that, right?
No, you didn't say any of that.
All right. Well, could someone please show me how to put a lock on this? Why is it still recording? Joe!
What? I brought the heat.
That crunching sound was Joe throwing the phone against the wall because it was the only thing he could think of to do. You also heard in that clip a very second episode of a television series moment where Joe was like, your ex-husband?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just so everybody knows what the premise of the show is.
Yeah.
So after the credits, Jessica's back in the bath, crying and listening to her Lilith Fair double disc. Lennon has limited success getting her out of the bathroom. And even when they finally do, poor Joe needing to use the bathroom, Jessica and Lennon end up tumbling into the bathtub together, and Joe sort of looks at them and is like, this is sadder than it is hot. They drag her to the bar, and she's still like laying on top of the jukebox listening to I Will Remember You. Lennon and Joe secretly ask the owner of the bar, their very handsome friend, Rav, to make up some story about a food critic coming to the bar soon and to ask Jessica to cook a dinner some night this week as a way to sort of buck her up, give her something to do, let her be productive, let her feel helpful. But not to tell her, just so, you know, because it's a sitcom, we need a ruse of some sort. Jessica is fooled, Lennon is happy, and Joe will be able to poop in his own bathroom again. The next day, Jess takes her famous pulled pork sliders out for a test run with her own personal food critic, neighboring grade schooler Quinetta. Just a bit of a sidebar, she's a bit of a tricky character for me, I think, on this show. The little mouthy black girl who exists to holler one-liners at the white ladies. Not a great thing, socioculturally speaking. The show never really leaned on that character too heavily, I thought, in my opinion. And I do have to admit, I loved how adversarial she and Jessica were throughout the course of the series. There's a moment in the pilot where Jessica sort of like gets angry at her and talks about how she went down to Lucky Nail and got it all done. It was one of my favorite moments, but that's not in this episode. So this is Quinetta sort of evaluating Jessica's pulled pork sliders.
Hurry up, she's getting restless.
I don't even know why we need her opinion.
Because she's the only one who'll be honest with me. You guys just tell me what I want to hear.
That's not true.
Last week you told me I could be a professional backup singer.
Well, you got the pipes for it, don't you?
Joe.
M'lady.
Thank you, Joseph.
So cute, what you're about to taste.
What's in this sauce? Because I don't like mayonnaise.
Oh, okay, there's just a little bit of red wine vinegar.
Red wine? I'm 9 1/2.
Okay, just eat the sandwich.
-2 points for attitude and presentation.
What are you talking about? The plate looks perfect.
I'm not talking about the plate. I'm talking about this.
Could you please eat the sandwich?
Quinetta considers the sandwich
really
for a very long time.
Really? Okay, well,
Sorry, I edited out that long pause.
Sorry. Okay, I anticipated and then didn't realize you would be that proactive, so very good.
Do you have me do anything different?
More of it.
Well, it's supposed to be baby sliders.
That's dumb. Now I'm going to have to go to McDonald's on the way home.
Okay, but Q, be honest. You really like it?
Oh, my God. Take a compliment. Do you know how hard it is for me to say positive things to you? I do not like you.
Later, Lennon has a run-in out front in front of the brownstone apartment with Jessica's ex-husband, who, after he got the butt dial the previous night, flew in from San Francisco to see Jess. Peter is played by Veep's Reed Scott, so you'll understand when I say that he does a very good job of making me not like his character, despite the fact that he looks like Reed Scott. Lennon is having none of him and sends him packing, which you will hear in this clip, along with, at the very end, Joe running up, despite not knowing what happened whatsoever.
Okay, get off my street.
Your street?
Get off my street,
Peter!
I'll
get off your street.
Get out of here! I'm not interested in what you're selling, okay? I don't want your Girl Scout cookies. Get out of here! Get out of here! Get!
Get out of here, buddy! What was that?
That moment reminded me so much of your brother, Sarah. I don't know why. It just seems like something he would do.
It reminded me of Dad, that he was like, yeah, fuck you! What were we talking about?
So Lennon and Joe decide not to tell Jessica that Peter came by because Lennon is worried that if Jessica sees him while she's this depressed, she might end up going back to him. So when it comes time for the dinner at the bar, Jessica and Lennon have had much success with decoration, but Jess is a bit of a meltdown in the kitchen when trying to deal with the two Felipes, who are her sous chefs in this situation, since she doesn't speak Spanish. But Lennon does, and we get a really great scene where Lennon tells the Felipes in Spanish to take care with Jessica and help her, as she is a broken woman. It's a gag that doesn't work super well without subtitles, but I'm going to have Dave, I had Dave clip it for the benefit of our listeners who can speak Spanish, and also the rhythms of it sound very good. So.
See.
Felipes, gather around. Enfrente de ustedes ven una mujer rota, una mujer cuya vida fue destrozada por un hombre con pelo negro. Right, because if we dress the slot too early, it gets soggy. You know, it's soggy. Como so una flor en el desierto, ella no ha tenido agua. Yes, agua. Good, Lennon. Debemos ser su agua. Right, we're going to stew it for at least an hour. We're not doing it enough, and that's where it's getting dry. Si hacen eso por mí, les daré muchos regalos para su familia de Navidad. Pulled pork. ¿Ve? Yes, they get it.
Christmas family. I love that.
So with Jess and the kitchen staff back on track, Rav pays her a nice compliment and they get to sort of goofing around / flirting. So, of course, that's exactly when Peter shows up at the bar. There's a big blow up in the kitchen between Jess and Lennon about Lennon lying about Peter being there. And Lennon tells Jessica that she lied because when it comes to Peter, Jess's judgment can't be trusted and she is a big dumb baby. Jess takes Peter out back and they talk it over. And to her credit, she resists the easy lure of back to her old San Francisco life of being a pampered but neglected wife. She sends Peter packing and then comes back inside and apologizes to Lennon, said apology coming in the form of an It's Raining Men dance along. You'll notice if you have seen the episode, I haven't mentioned the part about the food critic played by Kyle Mooney. It's funny enough, but he bothers me on SNL, so I don't want to talk about him. He's fine in this. Even now, I'm not entirely sure I picked the right episode. This one is a favorite of mine because it addresses the central point of the show, which is Lennon and Jessica's friendship, making them stronger together than they are apart. I do love a good episode-ending dance-along. There were other episodes I almost picked. The pilot, where Joe makes his monster energy chili, which sounds disgusting, but he keeps mentioning scoops. He loves his little tortilla bowl scoops. the one with Joe's parents, played by J.K. Simmons and Mimi Kennedy, is a good one. The one where Jessica ends up at the college party, which ends up being a cougar
yes.
ball, is a really good one. That's another one that has a good, like, Lennon blows up in anger thing and she just like goes after somebody.
There's also the one where Daddy's Boy from yes. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is
a dancer.
The one that got away, a dancer that Lennon
oh my
knows.
God, Daddy's Boy.
The series is 6 episodes. I just
they're
bit the bullet
perfect.
And bought them. I bought them all on Amazon Instant Video because they're not streaming for free, but like they are worth it. They're so funny, I think. I have such a soft spot for this show and I was so happy when Playing House became became a thing because it was more of this dynamic that I really loved. So I will, at this point, hand it over to you guys.
I would just say that, you know, this series, as short as it was, and, you know, NBC never really gave it a chance. I think it was canceled after wasn't it?
They played them all, but they burned them off in 3 weeks. They played them back to back.
Right. And like playing house, like, there's not a dud, you know? So I think it did the right choice by just picking something that had as many elements of the show. And it was pretty consistent, you know, the pilot adjacent-itis of the...
Your ex-husband
aside. You know, this could be a prequel to Playing House. This could be a dream sequence in Playing House. Like, it's very Playing Housey. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that, you know, everybody here holds that show in high esteem. Yeah. So, you know, this is almost just more Playing House.
Kind of.
Just in Brooklyn and with different names.
Yeah. It's a little more broad, like that food critic character, I don't think would be on Playing House. You know, I think that's the benefit of being on a smaller network like USA versus NBC. You're not pressured to be quite as broad in your writing.
I liked that gag, though, like just some of the writing work they did with it and how he had a whole website and the actual guy didn't know what the fuck was going on, but Joe was like, no.
But it was like a Freaks and Geeks character dialed up to 22.
I mean, first of all, there was a nice shout out to the Emmys because he was wearing Bradley Whitford's hat, but also Playing House has its share of weirdos too. There was a guy from season one who collected all the gnomes and had named them, and there were like hundreds of the Neil Casey character. Like, there's those kind of characters on Playing House too.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm with Joe that actor sort of just doesn't
fair enough
click with me, but you know, I can't find any faults with this nomination. It's just a really funny show. It's very indicative of the show. It's got some really great laughs in it, and you know, it's a shame we don't have video because the Felipe scene is really great, with the translations, you know, totally not matching what anybody's saying. So I would say, if you like Playing House and you've somehow missed this show, do yourself a favor, grab the whole season. There's only 6 episodes and, you know, watch it in the Playing House fallow season.
Yep. I agree. I bought all the episodes on iTunes at the time, 'cause I thought maybe this will help it get renewed. It did not, but you never know in this day and age, like, what is going to be the factor. So I wanted to support it as much as I could. That was literally all I could do, other than watch it. I agree with you that the Queen Etta character is potentially problematic, but like, whenever they try to do this character on a show, I hate it every time. And this is the only time, other than Tracy Jr. on 30 Rock, which Dave helpfully reminded me of, Bobby J. Thompson character.
Which he was much better, even saying, you know, 30 Rock, he was fine.
Yeah.
But on Human Giant.
On Human Giant in the...
It was amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
The sketch with the child talent agents.
Yeah. Ladybug? No.
Ladybug, maybe?
Something like that.
Something, I forget what it was called. Sorry.
I still remember that part in 30 Rock when he goes, my mom had to go take a weekend to Canyon Ranch before he broke it in half. I don't even know what that means.
I'm a child. I shouldn't hear that. Yeah, he was great. And Queen Etta, I just think you can, even in that clip, that's all you get of her in the episode. She's, that kid is just funny. Like, take a compliment. She's just good. I love the dynamic of Lennon and Joe and their support, and of Jessica with this whole ruse, as you say, and even Rob, who's like not 100% on board, going along with it, because you didn't clip it, but there's a scene where Lennon is trying to explain to him the urgency of this, especially after Peter comes to town, of like, do you want to lose her again to San Francisco? Like, the idea of like, she's their girl and she's part of the group. And I think they, considering that this was only the second episode, the relationships among the four of them were really well established and well drawn right from the start. Something that these two writers obviously do very, very well. I hesitate to mention this because I want Sarah to watch the rest of it, and now I don't know if she will. But originally, this is just trivia, Adam Pally was supposed to play Joe.
I didn't know that.
Why are you crushing my dreams?
I know, I'm sorry. He couldn't, because he was already in first position for Happy Endings, which was on at the time. And if it hadn't continued, I think he would have played this. But, you know, Happy Endings is also good. There's no losers here.
Yes.
I agree with you about the critic character to a point, but I like that Lennon described him to Joe as, why is your weirdest friend here? I also love seeing Lennon Parham speak Spanish, because her real husband husband is Latino in real life. He is a high school principal, I believe. So I
no
think
kidding.
He probably knows some Spanish for realsies. And just one final thought that I love that this show makes it seem like being a rich guy's wife is the worst thing that you can imagine if you have to live in San Francisco. The end! Great pick, Joe!
Shutterbugs was the name.
Shutterbugs, yeah. Thank you. Sarah.
Okay, I'm just going to get this out of the way right now. Two things. First of all, I feel like I never vote for Joe's candidate.
So you really don't.
I really wanted this to succeed. And then it opened with a pet peeve of mine coming from comedy writers who really think that, like, in a friendship of longstanding between like two characters of longstanding that like joke song in jokes with songs and singing is funny.
Not happening.
It's not funny. Never as funny as they think it is. It should never go on as long as they think it does. Like that's my opinion that it's not funny, but it always has to be shorter. And this, like when it came back at the end, I was like, God damn it. With that said, this is very playing housey. What Tara said before about the characters feeling really well established, I wondered a little bit. I actually made a note about it. Like, is that because I've watched all the playing houses like
right.
at least 1.5 times? I don't think it is. It is slightly different. Yeah, you could say that they don't stretch much, but they are really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who cares? Why should they stretch? They're good at this. And it's actually a really difficult thing that they do, being really funny and really true, but also very, like, not heartfelt, like, but, you know, heartfelt. Like, the number of times that Maggie or Lennon will, like, just be yelling and, like, really upset and sort of fiercely loyal to her friend is, like, you just don't really see that on comedies that much.
Yeah.
Or the like the feelings of this best friend made that important. Like if a kid gets kidnapped, yeah, you see that kind of like raw, you know, defending of your loved one.
Yeah.
But that you see it among these female friends is like unique. It's not something you see anywhere else. So the singing I feel like with these comedians is a problem. They need to not do it for a while. It's like the Bocephus thing or whatever the fuck that thing was.
Yeah.
I was like, is this, why is this on? Is this an outtake? But that's okay. It's like a rose. It has to have a thorn so you appreciate the beauty.
I love Bocephus.
And I also like I really was like, is it going to be a lot of singing? Because I really want to vote for this. I feel like I've fucking goose egg Joe like 18 canon submissions in a row.
You were there for My So-Called Life though, and That Good Wife, so you're okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Still, it's a pretty low percentage. I was feeling kind of bad about that, and I was like, oh shit, if I have to thumbs down this, there's going to be a rumble, but I'm not going to.
Yay.
Shall we vote?
Yeah.
Let's vote. Tara?
Yay, of course.
I say yay. Sarah?
Yay.
Yeah.
Best Friends Forever, Season 1, Episode 2, The Butt Dial. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has a winner.
Winner of the week is Once Upon a Time and its fans, because its producers finally announced this week that they are for sure doing a same-sex romance storyline this season on the show. They've had they've had plot lines in the past where they've sort of like hinted around at it, but they've been sort of cute about it. And now it's like, well, it's actually happening. And please go to previously.tv.
I got something for this. I just thought of.
Okay. Please go.
It's Robin and Marion, not Robin. Oh, wait a sec. That works both ways.
John Wayne's real name, I believe.
Marion with an O, sure.
Yep. So please go to previously.tv. Adam Grossworth wrote a piece for us yesterday, 2 days ago, as you hear this, where he made some pretty great predictions about how this should go, because they haven't said who's going to be involved yet. The smart money is on Mulan, because she was involved in the earlier one that was sort of like winky.
Yeah.
But he has some other possibilities. And he really objectifies some men, and I feel that that's important for us and the world.
Have they thrown Star Wars into that mix yet?
No, okay. But they could.
They could.
If I don't get Captain Hook's tongue at the back of some guy's mouth,
why?
I don't even know. He's so hot on
like
that
Captain
show.
Hook up. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was me with the Houdini gag. Sorry.
So as Adam says, and I will quote him, look, we all want to see Charming/David and Hook/Killian make out, or either that's them right. Making out with Robin, or all three. I can't even come up with anything funny to say about it. It's just a fact. I agree. I've seen their pictures. It should
agreed.
Happen.
Yes.
All right. And so what's going on with the loser? I get the feeling that there's three or four losers this week.
Yeah, we've got like a kick line of losers
there's
here.
A bunch.
All right.
Shall I begin?
Sarah, start us off.
Steve Ranazzisi of the league busted in a lie that he has been telling for over a decade about how being like nearby at 9/11 made him reevaluate his life and become a comedian.
He said he was in one of the
towers,
right?
He said he was
right?
in it. Yeah. He said he was
in
one of the towers.
He was in the one that didn't get hit at first, and then he escaped, and like he got out before the plane hit that
because he was working at Merrill Lynch at the time, so I guess that's what helped sell it. But apparently he was working at Merrill Lynch
in Midtown.
Except apparently
that was a lie, too, and then
people
have been uncovering other issues. And it really like...
Again, is there even a league? What can we believe?
I feel bad for the guy, like, and he's getting... I mean, he's just been getting scorched on social media.
Yeah.
And the SNL writer, Pete
Davidson,
whose father did die.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, a little kid, was like, yeah, that's cool. I'll just meet my dad for lunch on Twitter. And then, like, Ranazzisi tried to respond to that. And it's like, son,
no, dude.
Just
yeah.
have a seat, put your head between your legs, yeah. wait for somebody else to do something revolting.
Yeah.
But I feel like I do kind of feel bad for the guy. Like it was a very weird time
yeah.
and like things seemed to proceed from that event, even if you had no direct relationship to it.
Yeah.
With that said, he shouldn't have waited for someone to find it out.
Yeah. Fun fact, trying to look up that Pete Davidson tweet is how I found out that Pete Davidson has blocked me on Twitter.
What?
He did?
Not for anything that I wrote, but a friend of mine tweeted something at me about how we both think Pete Davidson's kind of a dick, and he blocked the both of us. So.
That's hilarious. Hey.
Isn't that great?
Is that because you were in one of the towers, Joe?
Yeah. I'm just going to come out. Yes, that's the story now that I will go with.
Note. That is not the story.
You know, before, if you remove the 9/11 part of it, it was a different event. This sounds like a plot to, like, a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, completely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah. All right, so what else do we have for losers?
Yeah, Joe has a loser as well.
Oh, yeah, so before we came up with that one, I said I could make the case for David Cameron.
Yeah.
And this fun new realizations about swine... creatures.
Swinophilia.
And, yeah. whatever the truth of this story is about this biography that's come out about talks about college, Oxford, I believe. Pranks and putting... Is it putting a his
the
dick
report
in a pig's
is that,
mouth?
Yes, he put okay. his wang in the mouth of
he
a
was,
dead
he was, the apple.
Pig. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. He was the
what
apple.
I read.
So, but to bring this into television,
arguably yeah. the sunset on the British Empire.
it's amazing how my favorite thing about it was like I on the Gawker post that I linked to, how the first like seven people are like, I wonder if I'm the only one who's going to make a Black Mirror reference. Like,
yeah.
No, we're all making the Black Mirror reference because it's insane how much that's like, because the thing with Black Mirror was that first episode was just like, that's the craziest shit I've ever seen
yes.
on a television show. And it's just like the fact that that was going to be the Black Mirror episode to be like, no, that's actually, that one is going to end up hitting too close to home. As I said on Twitter, I'm hoping now that all of the Black Mirrors come through, at least the one about how you can buy a robot of Domhnall Gleeson. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a theory about this, and it ends a little on a sad note for me, which is
oh,
this.
No.
This was just like swirling around in the background. Like this was
that's
a rumor. Like I heard the PM fucked a pig in college.
Right.
Right. And then that became the genesis of the story
yeah.
from Black Mirror.
Oh, is that true?
I think you're totally right on about that.
That it's like kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
For me, kind of takes away from the episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The episode was so fucking bonkers and like out there and like from left field and just like there that I was like, wow, who the fuck thought of that? I want to give them $20 for no reason. Like that was great. Congratulations. That was one of the best like hours the of television I ever said. And gay. Then like that is not true. I mean, that has basis in truth kind of like takes away from that accomplishment a little bit. The story itself as a whole is even crazier now, but the episode itself, I'm just like, oh, it sort of happened.
Dave, would it help you to know that there isn't inbreeding like in that episode of The X-Files? That's 100% fictional?
Phew. All right. So
that's it for losers.
That's it. All right. So that brings up an interesting question, guys, when it comes to pigs, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
The pig fucking stick
in
pig's mouth time.
No. It's game time. Phew.
We have fun.
Subscribe.
All right, everybody. This is the 11th game time of the season. Tara still has 4. Sarah right behind at 3. Value guess also at 3.
Very close season.
So the season is still on the line. Today's
I've got a lot to live up for with Team Valued Guest.
That's right.
Yeah. Doing proud. Today's game time comes from friend of the show, Alan Sepinwall.
Alan!
Oh, Alan!
Self an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Congratulations to Alan for 300 episodes of his podcast.
Nice.
Which is also now being shuttered because his partner is off to new adventures.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm sure he'll be back with a new podcast, but congratulations on 300 episodes. Yeah, a nice round number to end things on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Today we are playing from Alan Wheels Within Wheels, which will test your knowledge of the TV shows that exist within the universe of the TV shows we watch.
Okay.
So nothing to do with Wheels from Degrassi.
No. Okay. Well, maybe. We'll see. Alan broke it down into 13 themed rounds, each with a single question for each of you. So we got 39 questions.
Okay.
2 points for naming the show our fictional TV show is from. The real show that a fictional TV show is from, right?
Got it. Yep.
If you need a hint, I'll give you either the actor from the... I'll give you either the character from the fake show in most cases. When that's not possible, I will give you an actor from the show.
Okay.
All right. Most cases, you're going to hear a character name, but in some, it's just not possible because nobody really shows up in the show within a show.
Got it.
All right. So let's throw it to Picky and see who's going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, Tara, a.k.a. Tara.
Right.
We'll start with you, and then we'll go to our guest, Joe, and then to Sarah.
All right.
Are we ready to play Wheels Within Wheels?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yes. Round one. Everybody knows their name. Tara.
Yeah.
Sports Night. It's from what show?
Sports Night is a show within another show?
Yep.
Don't know.
Take a guess. Everybody knows their name.
Oh. Cheers?
Wrong.
Is it?
It's Sports Night.
Okay.
You dummy.
It's too
Everybody
obvious.
Knows their name.
All right, got it. Sorry.
Joe.
Yes.
The Larry Sanders Show.
Okay. This is a tough one. No, the Larry Sanders Show.
It is the Larry Sanders Show. Congratulations, Joe. Joe gets it.
Dave is disgusted by me.
Sarah. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Picky. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
All right. So that's 2 points for everybody except Tara.
I'm standing in the middle of the field in Afghanistan.
Round two.
Over here.
Round two. TV news.
Okay.
Tara.
Yeah.
FYI.
Murphy Brown.
2 points.
Nice.
Joe.
Yes.
WJMTV.
Ooh.
Also known as WJMTV 6 o'clock news. WJMTV evening news, which I should have said, or 6 o'clock news.
WJMTV. Oh, I want to guess, but I...
Want that hint?
No, I'm going to guess the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
You guessed right.
Nice. Yes.
Nice.
Ted Baxter was the hint. I think that would have given it to you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't pull it. News Night. Sarah, News Night.
Picky.
Is it the newsroom?
Yes.
Yeah.
2 points. All right, guys. Round three. Soap operas and other dramas.
Okay.
Exposé, Tara.
Exposé. Hint.
Nikki Fernandez.
Lost.
1 point.
Nice.
Joe.
Yes.
The Valley.
The Valley is, I'm pretty sure, the OC.
Yes, sir.
You are right for 2 points. And for Sarah, soap operas and other dramas, Invitation to Love.
Invitation to Love. Yep. Invitation to Hint.
Kyle MacLachlan is an actor from this TV show, not a character.
Not a character. Twin Peaks?
Yep.
Wow.
That's the reoccurring soap opera on Twin Peaks they show once in a while.
Yep.
Round four, shows with local appeal.
Okay.
Vermont Today.
The Bob Newhart Show? No, no! Oh, Newhart!
Wrong one. Newhart. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Wake Up, San Francisco. Wake Up, San Francisco.
I want to guess, but I'm going to play it safe. Give me a hint.
Danny Tanner.
Okay, that's what I thought. Full House.
That's good for a point.
Nice.
Sarah, Tool Time.
Home Improvement.
That's good for 2 points. All right, guys, round five.
Okay.
Kids shows.
Okay.
Kids shows. Tara?
Yeah.
Manson.
Oh, the Ben Stiller Show.
Ben Stiller Show is correct.
That's awesome.
And the hint was, of course, Charles Manson. For Joe.
Yes.
Miss Sally's Schoolyard. Miss Sally's Schoolyard is the show.
Real familiar. Hint.
All right. It is the actor. Okay. Edie Falco.
Huh. Miss Sally's Schoolyard.
Yeah.
Edie Falco.
Wow.
What would she have been on?
Joe, you can get this.
You can.
You totally can.
Or he Consider might
the
not.
Source.
It's a crazy world.
He'll get it.
Yeah. Think it through, Joe. What shows has Edie Falco been on? That said, we are going to need an answer.
Yeah. I have no idea. Oz? I don't know.
Yeah!
No, geez. Really?
Thank God.
Finally.
Was it like a reverie kind of weirdness? Or
it's,
No, she was just a character on the show.
No,
she was an actor on the show, not a character.
Oh, right, not on the show within a show.
Correct.
Right.
Oh, my God. Okay.
You're either going to hear a character from that you know, that was a participant.
Right.
Or an actor.
So, okay. Yes. So, okay. I got it now.
Yeah. Okay. Space Teens, Sarah. Space Teens.
Space Teens. Hint.
Robin Scherbatsky. Scherbatsky.
Character.
Yeah, that's the character.
How I Met Your Mother?
Yes, ma'am.
That is correct. All right.
Well,
I say let's take a little score break here at
All right.
the end of round five.
I have 5. Joe and Sarah are tied with 8 each.
All right.
Venti,
so.
Venti.
Venti.
All right. Round 6. More soaps and other dramas.
Okay.
All right. Monsignor Martinez.
Oh, just so God. Hint.
Monsignor Martinez.
Fuck. Breaking Bad?
Not a bad guess. King of the Hill.
Oh, right.
King of the Hill. The Passions of Santos. For Joe.
Hint.
Tara, is it?
Rogelio de la Vega.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Jane the Virgin.
That's good for 1 point. Prescription Passion, Sarah. Prescription Passion.
Prescription Passion.
Yeah.
I could guess, but I would like a hint.
All right, so it's Evan Gere or Even Gere if you're Liv.
Okay, that doesn't help. Scrubs.
I like that guess.
Yeah,
guess
good guess. House.
Oh.
Round 7, game shows.
Okay.
Game shows. Yep. Tara.
Yes.
Hollywood stars and celebrities, what do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out.
God. Hint?
Yeah. Mr. Peanut Butter.
Oh, BoJack Horseman.
Gold Case, Joe. Gold Case.
I was hoping I would get one of those. 30 Rock.
Very good. Sarah. Number Wang. Number Wang. But what's the show?
Number Wang.
Number Wang.
I feel like everybody else knows this. I don't. So I'm going to need a hint.
It was a can in a can.
It was. Robert Webb is an actor from this. Don't know his character name. Number Wang. Robert Webb. What do you think?
Robert Webb. Benson.
Aww.
I believe it's in the canon, right?
Yeah. That
I think Mitchell, we did put
the
it
first,
in
the canon. The first Number Wang is, yeah.
The Mitchell and Webb look.
Mitchell and Webb look.
Yeah. Okay.
Round 8. Cop shows. Tara.
Yeah.
Your cop show.
Yep.
Show within a show.
Right.
Bear on patrol.
Hint.
Fozzie Bear.
Wow. Oh. The Muppet Show?
That's good for 1 point. Joe.
Yes.
Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. I feel like I got this in a different game for a different purpose before. Friends.
Good for 2 points. Sarah, darkness at noon.
Ah, that's what I was hoping to get.
Oh, Good Wife.
That's good for two. That's really good. Round 9, still more soaps and still more other dramas. Tara?
Yep.
Five Towns.
Hint.
Johnny Chase.
Johnny Chase. Oh, Entourage?
That's good for 1 point. Joe?
Yes.
Oh, Single female lawyer.
Single female lawyer. Wait, all right. So Single Female Lawyer was a spoof on Ally McBeal, but what was the show?
What indeed?
What was making fun of Ally McBeal at the time?
What would dare to?
Who would dare tug at Superman's cape? Oh, shit. And I know I've seen whatever show this was. I've seen it. Hint.
Leela.
Oh, Futurama. There we go.
1 point. All right. Round 9.
No, Sarah.
I know.
Sarah.
Round 9. Sorry, ending round 9.
Okay.
Deep Powder. Deep Powder.
Deep Powder. Oh, boy. Deep Powder. I feel like I should know this, but I do not, so I need a hint.
Joey Tribbiani.
Friends.
Joey.
Whoa.
Oh! Alan!
Ouch.
Diabolical.
All right, round
cool.
10, guys.
Yeah.
Round 10, sitcoms.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Tara.
Yeah.
When the Whistle Blows.
Extras.
That's good for 2 points. Joe.
Yes.
Pucks.
All right. This is the one from... I always get this and Yo Teach confused, but that was from that movie. This is from Episodes.
Yeah.
That's 2 points.
Right. Nicely done.
For Sarah, Jerry.
Seinfeld.
Nice.
That is also good for 2 points. All right. That was the end of round 10. We have 3 more rounds left.
Still close-esque. I have 10. Sarah has 12. Joe has 16.
All right. It's still...
Holding it down for the valued guests.
Yeah.
Okay. Round 11, sci-fi or action.
Okay.
Sci-fi or action. Yep. Tara.
Yes.
Gumball 2, the number, Gumball, colon, Beach Justice. Gumball to Gumball, Beach Justice.
That's awesome.
What?
This is awesome.
Hint?
Bryant Gumball.
I'm going to say The Critic?
Yeah, that's a good guess. Yeah. Not correct. Family Guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Joe.
Yes.
Inspector Spacetime.
That would be Community.
That's good for two.
My favorite show.
Sarah. For Sarah, Ball Fondlers.
Bite a nickel. And
Justin Roiland. R-O-I-L-A-N-D. Apologies to Justin if I said his last name wrong. But deal with it.
Ball Fondlers.
Ball Fondlers.
Ball Fondlers.
Is that an actor or a character?
That is a actor. I'm going to say, he's not a character. Okay. He's an actor. He's also something else, but I don't want to say.
Gotcha.
Okay. A ball fondler?
In Living Color?
I like that guess.
Yeah, he is one of the creators of Rick and Morty.
Oh.
My other favorite show.
Round 12.
Yep.
Talk shows.
Okay.
Tara.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Saturday Night Live.
Ooh.
Joe. You heard with Perd.
What's up? You heard with Perd is from Parks and Recreation.
Sarah. Jesus and Pals.
Jesus and Pals?
Yep.
That's great. Hint.
G. Jesus.
Alan, come on.
Alan, I literally know where you literally live.
This woman edited your book, man. Come on.
Yeah, fuck.
Davy and Goliath.
She said Davy and Goliath.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, doubly so.
Sorry.
Anybody know that one?
South Park.
South Park. That is correct. All right. Here's our last round.
Sorry.
Tabloid TV. All right. Shows within shows. Tabloid TV.
Okay.
Tara, your last question.
Yep.
Sick, Sad World.
Daria.
There you go.
Good for 2 points. Joe.
Yes.
Rock Bottom.
Oh. Is this The Simpsons?
Yes.
Wait.
God.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to give you the points, but please ask for the hint.
Oh, what's the hint?
Your hint is God. Free Jones.
Mr. Simpson, no!
That's a good hint.
That is worth 2 points. All right, last question of the game for Sarah. Scandal Makers.
Scandal Makers. Oh, I totally know this.
You do.
Oh, the hint's probably not going to help you. Dave Attell. Dave Attell.
All right.
Now, he is an actor, but he's also kind of... I think he might be the character in this too, but don't quote me on that. It's been a little while. So it's also a show I've watched, so there's an extra hint.
Yeah.
Ancient Aliens?
Is that a real guess?
Yeah, actually it is.
Is it Arrested Development?
Yeah, it's Arrested Development.
Oh, so I think he's like, he plays himself playing one of the Bluths.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly.
Let's hear the
he
final
plays Tobias, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay, Sarah had 12, I had 14, Joe had 22.
Joe takes it. All right, guys, you ready for the shits and giggles question?
Yeah.
Yes. It's worth 4 Dave points.
Okay, let me get my Dave points tabulator out.
First person to shout out the answer, which is the show this show is from, wins 4 Dave points. If I don't hear an answer, I'll slowly start giving you clues.
Okay.
Here we go, but I think you're going to get it. Bamboozle.
Friends,
it is. That is the ultimate game. That's the game show that Joey is auditioning for. That makes no sense, but it's supposed to be this awesome thing. All right, congratulations, Joe, on behalf of Valued Guest.
Valued Guest.
Valued Guest.
Let's bring it home next week, Valued Guest.
Yeah.
So now we got 2 people ready to win the season on next episode. Mm-hmm. All right, Joe, where can people find you on the web?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter, at Joe Reed.
That's a verified account, guys.
Oh, yeah. He's fancy. Yes.
Yeah. Decider.com, I have a blog post almost every day, Today in TV History.
Yep.
Today was about the Veronica Mars premiere that was on the same day as the Lost premiere. Weekends, I'm at Vanity Fair. I'm sort of all over the place.
All right. And what's going on the site, guys?
I am wrapping up my coverage of Masters of Sex this weekend. It's been masterful and sexy. And I will be covering Heroes Reborn, the miniseries.
Oh, are you?
So, yes,
really?
I assigned it to myself.
Oh,
let's see how this goes.
Interesting.
So that premieres on Thursday. My coverage will premiere that day as well. Right. Sarah?
Homeland is returning in a couple of weeks, and you can read my continuing coverage of Project Greenlight.
Oh, God, please do.
The delightful relationship between Jason, the worst man... and Pete Fairley's amazing dogs at Previously.tv.
I forgot also I'm going to be covering Grey's Anatomy for Previously.tv starting this week.
Yes,
show's still on?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. All right,
speaking
fine.
Of Marie Celeste, Jesus.
I am at Clark on Twitter. That's pretty much if you want some dog photos, follow me. If not, I got nothing to offer you.
Oh, I have a PS, and this is also a tiny triumph. You can follow me on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Yesterday, I tweeted a picture of Tracy Morgan's hilarious baby. As of when we started recording, it had been faved 3,000 times.
Whoa!
That's how cute that baby is. You guys, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that baby is insane.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. It was an honor just to be nominated to talk about this year's Emmy telecast. We'd like to thank the Academy, God, and of course you, the viewers, without whom all this would be a pointless, mind-numbing exercise. Thanks to Liv for her latest face-off report, and to Sarah D. Bunting for the first of the... Blotter Presents series. We look forward to seeing you on the stage at next year's Emmys, guys. Mm-hmm. How can one be sad about not taking home a trophy when you're in the company of such great shows like Best Time Ever, So You Think You Can Dance, Project Runway, and Fargo? Truly, this is a golden age of television. We honored our fallen show Best Friends Forever with a special place in our hearts and in the canon. We added one more winner to the tally, and although there are new losers tonight, we certainly had plenty this week. We're not all business here, so let's congratulate Joe for his stunning victory in Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, your MC, and on behalf of our special presenters, Tara Ariano,
Motorboating Joke,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Smooth Joey Apollos, Gather Round,
and Joe Reed,
Shame.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grape.
You can't feed a man that much pulled pork and deny him access to his own bathroom.
Okay. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching the end of Season 9, Episode 8 of...
Face Off.
Did you like watching the end of the episode?
Yes.
What did you think was the best makeup that you saw? What did it look like?
I think it was Jasmine.
Yeah? Was it an angel, a witch, a goblin?
Maybe it was a witch.
Yeah? What color was it?
Maybe it was orange or purple.
Oh, that one. Yep. She was, that one was an angel and she was all metallic. The boy was metallic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you like that one? If you were doing the challenge, what would you do?
I would be a scarecrow.
Yeah? You would paint yourself as a scarecrow or you would make your model a scarecrow?
I would paint myself as a scarecrow.
Yeah? What colors would you use?
The colors that scarecrows do.
What colors are scarecrows?
Straw color.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right.
And they are dressed in farmer clothes.
Yeah? Do you have enough farmer clothes that you could dress up a model in that?
Yeah.
Cool. Would you give them a hat?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for speaking with me this week, Ellie.
You're welcome, and we'll see you next year.
Bye.
Bye.
Boy.